Yeah. I mean, they do laundry somewhere. It's
fine. Lots of Hawaiian shirts.
Yeah, I wish.
I had an annual general meeting as a little bit more business suit than Hawaiian shirt, I'm afraid.
Well, I mean, I think you could go with a Hawaiian themed suit.
Ooh.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay, let me consider that.
No.
I'd like to wear him, see him wearing a Hawaiian themed pant.
Ooh, I like it.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller. Shall we do this?
Let's do it.
Sweet. Oh, man, it's episode 194 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations, and it's the whole crew here today. How you doing, guys?
Peachy.
So we've gotten rid of the producer. This is the complete crew now.
We just accepted it.
Okay. Didn't that happen years ago?
We've come to terms with it?
Yeah.
Well, that's good to know.
What did you say, Seth? It's better than you're doing? You're not doing Peachy?
I said Peachy is probably a little better than I am. I'm absolutely exhausted. I'm beat to hell, and I got to recover, but I will. So.
And then you're back on the road again.
Back on the road again. I got 10 days before a nice 18-day around-the-world adventure, so I should probably finish booking some of those flights before the prices go up.
Yeah, I would suggest that.
So here, legit question. I hadn't planned on talking about this, but since we're talking about it, I have to get from the Dublin-ish area to the Nassau Bahamas area in a couple weeks, and I have to do it on a Saturday or Sunday.
Okay.
I was looking at option for the Heathrow to Nassau nonstop on British Airways. It's available on Avios. It's terribly priced for, you know, a cash ticket. And it turns out they don't fly on Saturday. And that kind of, you know, Saturday is probably the ideal day to do it, but I can make it work on Sunday. And the other option is something like Thomas Cook on a one-way from either London or Manchester to Orlando and then connecting onward or something else in a sort of setup like that. And I'm just, that London to Nassau route seems sexier as a line to me, but I don't know. I'm tempted to consider doing other things like fly to another random island in the Caribbean and then eventually connect to Nassau or something else. I'm curious. Any advice, any suggestions?
Is the Nassau one the one that connects one of the other islands?
I believe it connects onward to Turks and Caicos.
So British Airways has some other weird, like Gatwick to the Bahamas areas or the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Area.
And I actually thought Nassau and Turks was a Gatwick route, but it's apparently a Heathrow.
Might have moved.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was going to say, if you could do something kind of cool like that out of Gatwick and then connect onto Nassau, that'd be sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was looking at. One of the interesting challenges is the connections onward to Nassau aren't easy. It's just, I mean, it's a small Caribbean airport, so it doesn't have a ton of service. Somewhat ironically, the event I'm going to is the Caribbean Aviation Conference, where we're talking a lot about building up intra-regional flights and what's involved in all of that. So, you know, this is a good stepping stone for one of the topics I can talk about while I'm there, but I got to get there.
I'm surprised you're not flying to Havana and finding a way back that way.
Believe it or not, the reason is we were going to do Havana the week after, and the goal was to fly on the Antonov 158, which is grounded and is the aircraft that was being substituted for by the 732 that crashed and killed everybody.
Oh.
So, my plans for flying in out of Cuba these days have shifted a little bit, let's just say.
That's fair.
Yes, but it that was something that we were looking at very seriously. I was going to go with a couple of buddies.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think something random, if you could find something connecting to Nassau, would be awesome. Have you thought about like anything like, Colombia from?
Go all the way that far?
Yeah. I mean, it's further south than you want to go probably, but it could be cool.
Yeah. What I really need to do is pull up a BA route map and figure out what has availability.
Yeah. Let's talk United. We got a few United topics. So we're just going to hit that first and go with it. So United at LAX, I think this got announced today, is going to introduce some private suites or a private terminal for specific customers. Is this right?
It's bizarre. So the LAX private suites thing already exists, or premium suites. And this is someone built a private terminal on the airport grounds. And if you pay them enough money, they will pay for a TSA checkpoint and Customs and Border Patrol to come over and screen you as necessary. And it's stupidly expensive. It's a $7,500 a year to join, and then like $2,500 or $2,700 or $3,000 a ticket, depending on domestic international. It's very expensive to use. Now, the base rate model includes up to four passengers for the fee. So it's if there's a family or something, it's maybe a little better, but it's still very expensive. The United version of it waives the annual fee, and you basically get half price on the other fee, but it's still $1,250 to $1,500 a pop. So, I mean, I like a good first-class lounge, like not nearly like the rest of them, because I think they're somewhat overrated. But like, you know, first-class lounge is nice. You can get some good value out of that, whatever. But you've got to be kidding me with a $1,500 value proposition for a lounge access. I don't know, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's interesting. Like, they only offer it for certain flights, I was reading.
So there's 14 routes initially available out of LA, and it's a couple to Asia, Aspen, Colorado, believe it or not, Hawaii, and SJD, which is Cabo.
Yeah. And Melbourne and Sydney and Tokyo.
So it's these are the high value premium fare routes. These are the people that, you know, flying out of LAX, where United thinks people are going to use it more frequently, and it's a good starting point. But, you know, most telling to me is that the email address United gives, if you have questions and want, you know, information, is entertainment@united.com, which is clearly their sort of entertainment market segment, you know, actors and whatever marketing group, right? Like, that's the type of people they expect to be using it.
Yeah.
So
I think it's, I mean, to me, this it smells like the Lufthansa first class terminal without the Lufthansa first class terminal amenities is what it looks like.
Yeah, a little bit. And that's, you know, my initial thought about it was like, okay, it's fine, it's nice. You get the, you know, the private ride across the airfield in a BMW 7 Series to your plane and all this stuff. But yeah, it doesn't have a whiskey bar or, you know, 18 different, you know, a sit-down restaurant with menu service and all the different stuff to choose from. Or the water bar, which I think is perhaps the most ridiculous thing in the world, but, you know, they have it. You can get bottled water from around the world. Like, there are all those things that a real first-class terminal does or first-class lounge does so much better. And what this is getting you is private security screening and arguably, like, not having to show up quite as early because you don't have to deal with waiting in all the lines. But if you're checking a bag, you actually have to show up earlier. If you're checking a bag on an international flight, you have to be there 2 hours early. And if it's domestic, you have to be there 90 minutes early. And theoretically, you can just send your bag in advance, maybe, like, yeah, send the bag in a different car. But I don't know if you have to show ID normally you have to show ID when you're delivering your bag. So I don't know how they would deal with that. And it makes sense because they would take the bag across separately and they need time to drive it across to get it into the bag sort, you know, security system well in advance and to still make the cutoffs. But, you know, you're spending a little extra time if you have bags.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And there's some weird things.
I mean, it really seems like, I guess you're just paying a fee to avoid TMZ. That's just my feeling from this.
It's interesting, right? I mean, American has a premium offering as well, but they do it in the terminal building. So to Stephen's point, you get accosted by TMZ.
Delta has a thing with that. I think theirs was, and maybe it was a third party or not, but like theirs, you end up in some random parking garage. They pick you up in a car when you arrive, they take you out through the jet bridge, like the normal sort of premium connections thing. And they drive you to somewhere random in town. It's like in a parking garage somewhere, and then you transfer to your regular ride.
That's not creepy at all.
Well, I mean, they obviously.
Yeah, we're just going to drop you off over here. It's by Skid Row, you know, no big deal. Don't worry about it.
You know, my mom always told me not to get into strangers' cars. Yeah,
I don't think Clarence Beeks is going to be there to deliver frozen concentrated orange juice projections or anything, but. You know, yes, it is a little weird, but I can also see the value proposition of that is like it's some random place that they've got arrangements and it's relatively easy and it's certainly nondescript where it will be obvious if people are hanging out stalking you.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes
so
sense.
Good
but, but here's the thing, right? That's great when it first starts, but as people figure out where it is, what's the point? Like, unless they keep moving it like musical chairs.
Yeah. I mean, that is a fair point. It's also not available to everybody, right? It's not the sort of thing that I could just be like, you know, I could buy in, figure out where it is, and then use that knowledge to become a, you know, TMZ stringer.
Right. But I mean, someone at some this
at some point it's going to get out, of course. Yeah. It's I mean, but it hasn't yet, and it's been a while, so who knows? Or maybe it has, and I just haven't paid enough attention or cared.
I mean, anyway, I don't watch TMZ, so I wouldn't.
Yeah, I think it is. You know, the other thing to consider is like the first class terminal with Lufthansa is sort of considered the gold standard with this stuff, but like there are other very premium check-in options. None of them are a separate building necessarily, but like the new BA T5 first class lounge wing, where you walk in and it's a completely separate experience straight through into the lounge, is a good example. Virgin's upper class, even at Heathrow, is a separate area.
Yeah, I was going to say, I flew when I did the Amsterdam or the Heathrow back to Salt Lake City. I got to use their check-in, and I actually just like went and saw. I wanted to go through the whole process, so I like went up to the normal check-in area where they do this, and it's separate from the terminal. It's up above it, and if you didn't know about it, you would just go to the normal business class desk for Virgin. But this place is, it pull up in a car and kind of four people there waiting and straight to the security and then straight into the lounge pretty much. It's kind of
Thai Airways sells it. If you want to board, they have Turkish? One of the two of them. It's Turkish. I'm sorry, Turkish and Istanbul has an option where you can sort of board straight into the lounge or clear security straight into the lounge.
Mm.
And if you're a business class passenger, it's included. And I think maybe Star Gold gets it also because you have lounge access, but it may be only business class. I'm forgetting now. I did it once. And if you're not, maybe it's only business class. And if you're Star Gold or otherwise, you can just buy, and it's not that expensive, but like buying access to the lounge for the day includes that security screening or something like that. It was a pretty reasonable deal.
Are you saying the United check-in area in Penn Station doesn't live up to the standard of these others?
Didn't they close down as a check-in and turned it into like a shopping experience?
Well, but it's confusing. I don't know. You can probably get a boarding pass printer there, but you definitely can't drop off your bags. Sure. But they have a full service agent kiosk with a boarding pass printer.
See, I thought that closed.
Oh, no. I at least was there within the last few weeks when I went through.
Okay. Right outside the Amtrak Club, right?
This is on the other. No, it moved. This moved. Okay. So what you're thinking of is the old in the booth. Those are gone. This is now when you're walking, when you come in from the 7th Avenue side and as you're walking towards the Amtrak Club, it'll be on your left before the Hudson.
Interesting. It's like in that sort of open area where the other check-in, other Amtrak info desk and whatever is, or past that?
Yeah, it's right. If you at the info desk and you look left, it's in the store on the corner there.
Okay, yeah. So that store that they open, I guess. Yeah, the reality is I don't care anymore because I don't live in New York City anymore. So whatever.
So one other point about this private suites market, like, so it's pricing at $12.50 for a U.S. domestic flight, right? That's the single visit, and then $14.95 for the international. So there's a $250-ish premium for an international flight. Which, like, I don't know. It just kind of seems kind of weird. I don't know which one's mispriced.
On arrival, it makes sense because of CBP. Yep. You have to pay for someone to come over. Departures, I guess there's a little more work involved in getting that screening done, but I don't know.
It just seems
because they can.
It's just random. Yeah. Anyway.
I am impressed that they built it in as a line item that can be added on. It's a queue surcharge, like the YQ.
Yep.
For fuel surcharge. It's just another line item that a travel agent can manually add into a ticket, which is kind of neat.
Do you get EQDs for this? Because it's YQ.
That's a good question. Is it considered a carrier imposed surcharge? I would guess no.
Dang it.
You would buy this access just for the EQDs?
I mean, it's potentially. Just think about it.
Cheaper than a mileage run?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm in LA. Yeah, you know.
Just wait till December 20th when he's like a couple thousand dollars short.
Oh, God.
Oh. I won't be this year. Don't worry. So United is also shifting flights at Newark and Dulles. This came out, I guess it's almost been a week now since this news came. What's the details here and why are they doing this?
So I know they're moving three routes that used to connect via Newark are all going to connect via Dulles now. Ithaca is the one I remember because it's the one that potentially affects me.
Hartford and Baltimore. Not Baltimore. Hartford and Des Moines?
No, Des Moines and Baltimore. Des Moines and Hartford are being dropped completely.
It's Wilkes-Barre.
Okay.
Scranton.
Okay, right. And then BWI is dropping completely, as is Des Moines and Hartford from Newark. They're just dropping those.
So is Wilkes-Barre bus going away?
No, that's Allentown. Wilkes-Barre was flights.
Oh, okay. All right. I didn't know where they drove their bus. Sorry.
Yeah. Beaumont. Beaumont, right?
Yeah, Beaumont. That's good. BPT.
The Houston bus?
Yeah.
Anyways, the argument is that they'll be able to better grow the Dulles hub and better connect passengers from these three cities. I think better connect is relative in that those passengers will be more likely to make their connections because when weather hits Newark And those were the first flights to cancel. And now they won't cancel anymore because they'll be flying to Dulles instead.
Yeah. We kind of briefly talked about this, I think, on the last show, right?
I think so.
It helps with flow and things like that.
We didn't have the full list of all the other changes. What's interesting to me is that Newark is getting, they say they're increasing frequencies and upgauging a bunch of other, you know, more popular markets. We'll have to see how that actually plays out.
Yeah. But it's mostly like markets that already exist, like Orlando. Like it's a bunch of Florida markets, or half the, and it's a one for one basically. For every flight they've dropped, they've added a flight.
Yeah, which is a little weird to me that they're doing Florida as the growth, especially because those are some of the lowest yielding fares, right? That's where the fights are between, you know, Fort Lauderdale and Orlando is Spirit and JetBlue.
I agree. I don't understand it. Someone has a nicer Excel spreadsheet than I do.
Oh, man. Along with that, there's been a bit of a shakeup in the United leadership. The CFO recently left, and the chief of staff has resigned.
Did you know there was a position of chief of staff to the CEO?
I had no idea.
I did, because this is the woman that pushed out a lot of the people that we know.
Interesting.
So this is the woman that came in and basically put back a bunch of the pre-merger United folks in leadership positions who had no idea what the hell they were doing, which is why we are back to being consistently inconsistent.
Yeah. And so do you think, you know, she's now been pushed out? Is that the general feeling?
It's unclear. Apparently she's from the South. She moved for this position. Who knows? She's wherever. I forget where she's going, but it's a position back in the South. So maybe she just didn't like Chicago. Maybe Kirby's building up to bring in his own cronies to screw us all even further. Unclear.
And then the CFO leaving, what do you think the impetus there is?
Well, my guess is that the airlines are in for a tough ride ahead. I mean, as much as Kirby would love to say that they're going to just pass on the increased cost of fuel to passengers, they really can't, because they really have to match fares to the competition.
Yeah. And fuel is up. I mean, recently it's now back to kind of normal levels, what it was 4 or 5 years ago.
And going.
Yeah. Interesting.
So fuel is an interesting thing. So I have a question. You know, when fuel costs went up years ago, they all imposed fuel surcharges. Shouldn't they have been giving us a fuel discount the last few years?
That's not how it works, Foss.
Also, in the markets where fuel surcharges were regulated, they did come down.
Yeah, where they're regulated.
Where they were regulated. So like Japan required that fuel surcharges be tied to actual fuel prices, and they did come down. In some cases, they disappeared, and so fares were raised to compensate. As always, the fare being charged, if that part of the total cost is built into the fare, it's discountable based on corporate contracts, where it's not if it's a fuel surcharge. And that was always the issue with those things. Speaking of which, the United Premium Suites thing is actually discountable depending on the corporate contract.
Wow. So if they have like a movie producer contract or something.
If the contract includes discounts on certain things, it could be included in that as well.
Yep. Interesting. Last United topic, Boeing. The rumor is United's going to go with Boeing and not the A330neos as its 767 replacement.
Which we kind of predicted.
We did, because they already have a 787 shop. They don't have any Airbus A330s.
Get engines that run.
Yeah. Well, and I think we all agree that the A330neo was more lift than they needed, right?
Well, but the argument would be a 78 would be more lift than they need as well.
Yeah, I'm talking about more, I guess, more people, more passengers.
Have you seen what they're flying to Hawaii these days?
I know. I wonder though, if Boeing does win this, does United start sticking the new Polaris seats in the 787s sooner rather than later?
Well, they're supposed to start with the 7810s, right?
Yes.
Do those get the new Polaris seat?
That's what I thought.
Yeah, what I thought.
Yeah. But I know they get premium economy. I don't expect the retrofits to come to be accelerated on the other aircraft.
Mm. So you think they would take delivery of 788s, potentially with the old lie-flat seats?
I would disagree with that. And I say that because they've made this public statement that they're going to be releasing a new plane every 3 weeks, and they'll have the entire fleet done by 2020.
But the number of aircraft that are covered in that is just 76s and 77s, I think, if you multiply it out. I don't think it includes the 78s.
I thought it did include the 78s after they made that claim, because they're coming off much faster than one every 3 weeks.
Let's go look at
the answer. That they're not going to come out that much faster, especially during peak summer.
Oh, like we're going to hit a slowdown here soon. basically. Yeah.
Right, but if they've been able to release half a dozen in the last 6 weeks, I imagine as soon as September hits, we'd pick up the pace again. Assuming Zodiac can deliver seats.
Another unknown, right?
Exactly.
What else we got? Oh, Delta is talking about going back to India. Now, who knows if this is empty rhetoric, but because of the U.S.
Are they claiming they won?
Yes, that's what it is. They've claimed that they've beat the ME3 and they can now return to India and fly there effectively and be competitive.
Do they not recognize that even if Etihad and Emirates and Qatar Airways don't add any new Fifth Freedom routes, which is the only agreement they have at this point, and even that's not really an agreement, they still can't actually compete on price to like in total cost into India because those airlines already operate to far more cities directly from their hubs and
I wish I was a fly on the wall in their offices.
I mean, here's the thing with India, right? India is an interesting market because it's all about back cabin economics. It's all about volume. And Emirates, Doha, Qatar, whatever, has a lot more lift than Delta will ever have with a 350. Because they can't fly a 330. So it's like, why even bother? And the only reason would be for corporate contracts, if that. Because they're definitely – I'm sure they're losing some business with the lack of nonstop flights in the premium cabin. But will it make money? I mean, American used to fly Chicago to Delhi for years, and they claimed they lost millions of dollars on that route.
United seems to think that they're still making money on their two routes from Newark. So there is potential. But I'm with you. I think this is BS.
You think it's bogus?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I think United is making money, but and part of it has to do with the density of Indians in the New York City metro area.
Sure.
That aren't onward connecting in India or going to a tertiary city in India. They're going to the two, you know, Mumbai and Delhi. That's where they're
going. Right. Right. And but the reality is like the tech centers are not Mumbai or Delhi.
Yep.
So, you know, that's where a lot of the business travel is going. So, unless they go to one of the secondary cities, it won't make sense. But is that even a worthwhile effort?
Interesting.
And to be fair, if you're doing one stop anyways on Delta, you do have the Air France KLM JV option.
Yep.
Just like United does with its Star Alliance partners.
And the Jet JV.
Yeah, and Jet. I forgot the Jet's part of that now.
So some other weird news. I guess it's not weird. It's just we were waiting for when it was coming. Alaska is closing their New York City base.
Crew base,
not shutting down their routes, they're just closing the crew base.
Well, they're shutting down the LaGuardia routes.
Yeah. I'll get to that. So part of this is the LaGuardia closing of LaGuardia routes, which they were really flying LaGuardia Dallas Love Field out of obligation.
And that had already been downgraded to a
it's an E175, right? Yeah, it's a 175. Yep, they were SkyWest, and you know, I think it makes a little bit of sense because I guess they're just going to say everybody's crew, the crew bases are all on the West Coast, and pick one of the West Coast locations and fly out of there. And maybe it's saving them some money. I don't know.
I think it saves some money. It reduces flexibility a little bit if you get a plane stuck in New York, but you know, fewer crew bases is good right up until the point where something goes sideways, pear shaped, badly.
Yep.
Right. I mean, this is United. Slashed a bunch of crew bases and along the way had trouble getting things operating smoothly again. Now, they also had the challenge of separate crews for different aircraft types and all those other things after that merger. So I don't expect it to be exactly the same, but there are some good reasons probably to close the base given how few flights there are.
Yep.
I mean, a part of it could also be that they're flying out of JFK less than Virgin America used to. I mean, I looked the other day and they're down to a handful of flights to LA and San Francisco, and they've got one flight to Vegas. And they used to have a lot more.
Well, don't they have the PDX and Seattle flights?
Yeah, they have three times daily Seattle. That's
on the Alaska side, but this is an old Virgin base, right?
True, but I mean, they're now kind of swapping planes now. I mean, you're seeing Seattle, San Francisco, and Seattle to New York on Alaska Metal, like the old flights that used to be Virgin flights.
But it's still not a ton of flights.
True. No, I agree. I think it's weird because it's like, oh, I bet there could have been some incentive for Alaska Metal flight attendants to be based in the East Coast.
And the LaGuardia flights were SkyWest or Horizon, so that wouldn't have mattered anyways to the base.
True.
Right.
But I mean, New York's expensive, right? And not a lot of people on that. Like, yes, there's bases here, but a lot of them commute.
Yeah, so, I was going to say, Stephen, you're talking about how it'd be an attractive thing for the crew to live there.
Yeah.
And most would say at the pay scale they're getting, they can't afford to live there. And so they're going to have to commute in. So maybe if there was some push by the crew to actually close it.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Like, this is too expensive. We'd rather be based on the West Coast where we can afford it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, San Francisco. It's much more affordable.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. China is easing restrictions on long-haul flights. So as we've talked about before, China has for their carriers, for their for Chinese carriers, there's a restriction that only one carrier can fly on a particular route pair or a city pair. So there can only be one carrier on LA Shanghai that is a Chinese carrier. And back there, I think it's China Eastern right now, et cetera. And this goes everywhere basically in North America, I believe. And so they're easing that restriction. What are the details, Seth?
I have no idea. No,
it's okay.
I think it's only – they still have like two tiers of cities or mm-hmm. city pairs where it matters. But – so there will still be some restrictions in some cases. I also think it might only be United States, not all of North America. And that's okay. just based on the bilateral treaties limiting slots. And it's because of those limits, the Chinese – government doesn't want the competition. It's a little surprising to me that they're trying to induce competition in a market where their carriers have been adding a ton of discount sort of flights and massively destroying yields, right? Like, it's not like these are suddenly markets that are supporting incredibly high revenue.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a little surprising to me that they're seeing this as an opportunity to like do good things for the market.
So they're saying, let's see, airlines, the secondary category comprises of all routes outside Category 1 but divided into long haul, those to Europe, the USA, Oceania, and Africa.
Okay, so it is more markets. Okay.
Could it be a play to connect more people in China?
Yes.
Right, and maybe that's the longer-term picture is trying to get people to fly through a Chinese hub over Seoul or Tokyo at this point, because there's a lot of these routes where the dominant carrier can't fly through certain cities. Because someone yes. else grabbed it first.
And one of the big things is like the new airport in Beijing is opening up late next year, maybe?
Yep.
And yeah, and that's a China, I forget which I guess.
China Eastern is the one
that's the China Eastern hub? Yeah, or?
China Eastern and China Southern.
And so I thought China Southern was Guangzhou.
No, well, I mean, it's the anchor tenants of the new airport are China Southern and China Eastern.
Okay, but Air China has most, that means Air China has most of the routes to North America from Beijing or something like
yes,
that. And so.
Yes.
So these other carriers want to be able to have a real hub, and to do that, they need to have the ability to fly the additional routes, and that means that the one route, one carrier policy falls apart. I think it's sort of where it's coming from. I still, though, I don't understand where the value proposition is in terms of delivering great revenues and how they don't see it as eroding an already sort of competitive market that mostly focuses on the cheapest fare.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like to me like you're all of a sudden going to run into six carriers on LA Beijing flying A380s or whatever.
Right.
And
yeah.
It just erodes any chance of a profit that you had.
That's where I see it going. But, you know, the good news is I fly to Asia every now and then, and I don't mind connecting in China most of the time. So cheap seats for me.
Yeah, yeah. The winner, winner. One other thing that we wanted to talk about just briefly, travel delays are expected in Canada as customs agents are being moved from the Greater Toronto Airport Authority, I think, down to Quebec or up to Quebec for an expected migrant surge, people seeking asylum. Do you guys think this is really going to happen? I mean, and why Montreal?
Nothing about this makes me not laugh. I find the whole thing incredibly amusing. Do I think that they're going to actually move the employees? Yes. Do I think there's going to be a sudden migrant surge this summer of people from the United States crossing the border in northern New York seeking asylum in Quebec? I guess maybe they could go to Vermont or New Hampshire too. The border's a little rougher if you go further east. I think that that's pretty funny.
I always thought the Canucks were a little more organized than the TSA.
Well, different departments, Steve. Foz, come on. This is, you know, CBP, not TSA equivalent. Well,
that's true. But still, I don't understand it. I mean, maybe they have some information that we don't have access to. That's always possible.
Sure. Are they in on the secret Facebook groups of the people planning these massive asylum migrations?
Maybe Edward Snowden tipped them off. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, someone called in advance like, hey, we got a couple thousand of us planning on sneaking in soon. Can you be ready for it?
Oh, yeah. Wait, hey, you know.
It's even Canada, not Minnesota.
So do they use like a Trojan Zamboni?
Oh.
Foz takes it to the next level. Oh, man. Anyway.
There's your episode title, folks, in case you're curious.
So we had a
write it down now.
We had a listener send something in, kind of late breaking. You had asked for topics on Twitter, Seth, and
yeah,
frequent flyer stated that AA award availability, which is already pretty bad, is now not showing up on BA.com on British Airways website.
Yes, British Airways is actively informing customers when they log in that, quote, there is a technical problem with American Airlines reward flight availability, which American Airlines is currently working to identify and resolve. While this problem is ongoing, to book a reward flight on American Airlines, please contact your local contact center. We apologize for the inconvenience. There's a lot of extra letters and weird spellings of things because it's British English, but, you know. Apparently Americans feed into the sort of shared award inventory thing is busted, which I find amusing.
It could be intentional too. Who knows? you never know.
You do never know. I'm guessing against intentionally blocking the stuff, but.
Well, I mean, we remember, I don't know, I think it was Alaska, right? They were like, oh, we're having a technical problem with these awards. Come to find out they were getting ready to just, you know,
shut it down.
Yeah.
They're testing shutting it down. I'm pretty sure American and BA aren't testing shutting down access between each other. So. I'm willing to be wrong on that one, but I would bet a decent amount of money on it.
You never know.
You do never know.
And lastly, I have a topic. It's kind of random. I'll share it in the chat between us real quick, and then I'll talk about it briefly. So I'm fascinated a little bit by kind of the random places in Europe. I mean, Seth has made me very jealous by going to the Orkney Islands and flying some of those flights.
Yes.
But there's a place in Germany where a narrow gauge railway connects all of the homes to the mainland. So it's just south of
Denmark. I guess we should mention that it's an island.
It's an island, yes. Excuse me. But it's a bunch of homes on this island that have direct rail access to the mainland. And it's got, you know, everyone has these like little diesel trains, and there's videos of this online. The island is called, I'm going to butcher this, Nordstrandishmoor. And it's connected to the mainland by just this little railway, and they can drive their private trains back and forth to another city on the mainland. Some of them are wind powered, some are diesel powered. So I think it's fascinating.
Just looking at the pictures of it, and it's like, that's just a really long, flat, random straightaway, huh?
Yeah. And then it like branches out and goes to their house. So
that's,
I don't know.
Cool.
I don't know who runs the switches or what. But I think it's pretty cool.
You think they like have figured out a way to like internet enable them, like send a text message and the switch?
Oh, that'd be cool. That'd be really cool.
You could screw with people really good with that kind of system.
I suspect it's more like some of the airports where you key a frequency and it'll happen.
Yeah. It's kind of like how trains, I mean, some of the like the trains here work is like you call a number on it's a frequency that you dial in and it lets you know that you're there. So,
Yeah. That looks pretty cool, and it's, I guess, just north of Hamburg, up that way?
Yeah, it's just south of Denmark.
Okay, sort of six of one, half dozen of the other. I may have to put that on the list for next year's Aircraft Interiors event.
Yeah. So
I do try to do something stupid and ridiculous on every year's trip, so
yeah,
this would definitely qualify.
And it was built originally to ferry out building materials for coastal defenses, and was destroyed by a bunch of ice flows, and then was rebuilt for people who live out there. So
now, is it only these private trains? Do I have to make friends with someone there to get to ride on one?
I don't know. That's the thing I can't find. I can't find any more information on how you actually, you know, get a line, get a ride on one of these. Apparently, some of the wagons actually are owned by the national parks in Germany. So maybe it's possible.
Okay, well, maybe we need to get one of our German colleagues to weigh in on this issue.
Yes, my colleague.
Yes.
That's a joke. Never mind. Anyway,
it's not possible.
It's not possible.
My colleague says it's not possible.
Yeah, that's like a, if you ever
have the problem is we don't want that answer, so we need new colleagues.
Yes, if you've ever been in Frankfurt or Munich Airport and you have a request that's different or even just normal, and you ask it, most of the time, the answer is I've spoken to my colleague and they said it's not possible. So.
Well, they don't want to take responsibility for disappointing you. It's someone else's fault for disappointing you, but they're just not going to do it.
Exactly. Exactly.
And to be fair, it's not just a German thing. They do it in Amsterdam, too.
And France.
They get on the phone, dial a fake number.
Yeah, so they're talking, you know, hell, if they're talking, if I only speak English and they're talking in Dutch or German, I won't know what they're talking about anyway. It's going to be talking sports scores for all I know.
Hey, just stay on the phone here for a minute while I got this jerk. Yep. Anyway, you guys got anything else?
Not an inaccurate observation about me?
Well, I'm just remembering Guam and we were all pretty, jerky. That's the first time I've ever seen you mad. Well, I take that back. You. That's the first time I've ever actually seen you, like, upset in an airport, I should say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Well, it was a traumatizing experience all around.
Yes, it was. I would agree with that.
I'd like to think that those agents are also traumatized.
And hope we never come back.
First trip in vain in the history of Guam.
It's true.
I feel like we should get a plaque for that.
Dude, it would take them like 8 years to figure out how to print that thing. It took them 6 hours to figure out how to print his boarding passes.
I didn't say the plaque had to come from Guam.
You know, I still think about that. I still think about that trip every now and then. I go, man, we sat at that counter for almost 6 hours.
6 hours.
And then by the time we got to the gate, we had to basically run to catch the flight after taking a shower.
We had a brief window in the lounge, but yeah, it was not pretty.
We sat through two banks of flights. We stood there through two banks of flights.
Yeah, we watched them process an entire 777 of misconnected Japanese passengers, which is insane.
And then there were the four of us.
Anyway, anything else, guys?
No.
I'm good.
Good. All right. Well, our listeners can find us on Twitter at dotslines, moredotsmorelines.com. Send us a tweet, send us a message, send us a Patreon note. We love hearing from you, and we'll try to answer your questions. So thanks for listening, and happy travels. Bye-bye.
Take care.
See you.